This podcast is presented by All Copy Products, proud partner of the Arizona Cardinals. Learn more at allcopyproducts.com.
To the 15 to the 10. Murray's going to score. Touchdown.
Welcome to the Cardinals Red Sea Report.
Slammed to the ground by Buda Baker. Like a torpedo, he came flying into the backfield. Connor to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone for the touchdown.
The Cardinals Red Sea Report is brought to you by Arizona Cardinals Podcast. Visit azcardinals.com/podcast.
Here we go.
One-handed catch and a touchdown.
Oh, baby. How's that feel?
Here's Craig Grealoux, Paul Calvisi, and three-time Pro Bowler Kyle VandenBosch.
T-minus 16 days, gentlemen. We are getting closer, and I say thankfully, we are getting closer to the 2024 NFL Draft. Don't know about either one of you, but Paul, I am basically in mock draft fatigue at this moment.
Oh, no, not
yet.
And
we still have 2 weeks to go, and I'll still look and I'll still dissect, but I'm getting to that point where I just want that draft. I want Commissioner Roger Goodell to take the stage and say the Arizona Cardinals are on the clock.
You're sick of the mock drafts. You're ready for the real draft, and I'm here to say no. Give more, please. I want more mock drafts. I want more insanity. I want more speculation. I want the price to continue to go up and up through the stratosphere. I want more teams interested in number four for the franchise quarterback. I just want the prospect of more teams vying for it and once again having to pay for it and setting the Cardinals up for the next decade.
There are a million mock drafts, and I don't think that's hyperbole at all. I do think that there are a million mock drafts out there. And it's changed a little bit, Kyle, since you were playing. How much do players pay attention to the mock draft and even care about where they might hear their name called?
They do. I think it affects players, where they're projected. I think it hurts players when, we've all seen those players in the draft room waiting for their name to be called, expecting to be a top five, top 10 pick, being a part of that draft day slide and the disappointment in their face. And then you can see the elation of other players who are picked higher than expected, and it's all projection, and it takes is one team to fall in love with the player for one reason or another, and but players do pay attention, and agents are telling them one thing, teams are telling them another thing, their family are telling them something, the internet, some random guy on Reddit's telling them something, so. I think as much as we are ready for this thing to get over with, I got to imagine all these draft eligible players are ready for this to be over. I know at this point, when I was waiting around for the draft to happen, I just wanted to know where I was going to go. It seems like forever you've been working for this moment your entire life. Really, to me, it didn't matter where I was going. I just wanted an opportunity to play. I wanted to move forward. I wanted to get my best foot forward and just continue my career. But you're kind of left in limbo, not knowing where or what opportunity you're going to get.
Lions Pro Bowl receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown was taken in the fourth round. I still remember a clip last training camp where he named, from memory, the 16 receivers drafted ahead of him. So with certain players, it's an affirmative. It's an absolute yes. They pay attention, and they know exactly who went and who went before them in particular.
There are only 32 first-round selections, but the noise makes it seem like there's 64 first-round picks. To your point, Kyle, not everyone is going to hear their name called on day one, and who's going to be that player that sits in the green room, a la Aaron Rodgers, as pick after pick after pick is selected, and you're waiting for that name to be called. But teams right now, between now and 2 weeks from Thursday, what is the plan? What is their course of action? We know pre-draft visits are happening, continuing with the background checks, the medical checks. Well, here is former general manager Scott Pioli on the NFL Network.
There's a lot of little detail work that needs to get done at this point in time. But the work that's being done on your front board shouldn't really exist. The top players, you should know exactly where they're at. You're just doing a little bit of cleanup work on some of those top players. And you've got the final 30 visits coming to your team. You've got private workouts that you do. Now, the other thing is this. You're thinking about strategy. There's the evaluation process of the draft, and then you have strategy. So you're spending a lot of time on the phone with your close friends in the industry that are either coaches, meaning head coaches or general managers, trying to figure out where you may be able to find value in trades.
strategy, Kyle, in the terms of, okay, if this happens, then we need to be ready to pivot to X, Y, and Z. All right, what if A happens and we want to go left, and then we want to go right? That's what I think is happening right now. Yeah, we've heard Monty Austinfort say that he doesn't really pay attention to mock drafts, but teams, I believe, do their own mock drafts to be ready for any scenario that presents it to them so they can figure, all right, this is what we're going to do, or wait, maybe we can drop back and then move back up.
Yeah, from conversations I've had with some of my coaches and front office personnel, they do over and over and over, probably on a daily basis. They take turns being different teams. They go through different scenarios and talk about how it may happen and what happens. And they actually put their pressure on each other when they're on the clock so that it's not so daunting on draft day. And you've been through it before and you're ready to make the decisions that you might have to make. Look, there's still a lot of things happening. You know, these front office execs weren't outside like Paulie yesterday looking at the eclipse and taking the day off of work.
Dang.
Celebrating, you know, this thing that supposedly is supposed to be all majestic. They're working. There's a lot of things. They've got so much data that they still have to, you know, go over with each other. And while the scouts have done everything, you know, they've evaluated and they've looked at film, you've got to think that they still want to get with the coaches and what does the fit look like? Because just because a player stands out on tape and he's measured well and he runs well and he's got good length, or, he, you know, you're really impressed with what his coaches say about him, does the position coach that would coach him, does he think he would fit into that position group? Would he fit the scheme that this team runs? And, you know, a lot of those things have to still happen. And then there's also, you know, one of the things that probably more than ever with all of these mock drafts is just the prospect of the immense amount of trades that could possibly happen or could not happen. And those don't happen on draft day. The parameters of these trades largely happen now. These are talked about. And we saw when, you know, when it was profiled last year, Monty Osfort's on the phone and he gets on the phone and he said, hey, you know, that deal we talked about, it, are you still good with that? You know, that deal we talked about, we need a little bit more. So those parameters happen before the draft so that when the decision time comes, you can make that quick decision and the trades can happen if that's the route you want to go.
By the way, yep. In the break, Kyle, I got some pictures of Paulie's solar eclipse from Monday's event.
You know what? No regrets, right? If you're Monty Osifort, no regrets. You got to do all your homework. Like me, I actually have regrets from yesterday. I should have gone to Dallas. The last total solar eclipse was in 1878. The next total solar eclipse in Dallas will be 2345. I mean, that's a certified mind blow. And then when I saw the live shots of complete darkness for 4.5 minutes, I should have gone. I should have called in sick. You're absolutely right. So if you're Monty Osifort, you don't know where you're going to draft. You have Marvin Harrison Jr. reportedly in for a top 30 visit because maybe you are picking four. But if you go down to six with the Giants, that's why you have Rome Odunze in. Or maybe you're going down to 11 with Minnesota. That's why you have Terrion Arnold in. Or maybe you end up at 13 and J.C. Latham is in. So all these top 30 visits correlate to the different scenarios because you don't know where you're going to end up. They had Chop Robinson in, reportedly. So, okay, is he coming at 27? Or maybe is he coming at 23 if you do a deal with the Vikings? No regrets. Do all your homework.
According to reports on Tuesday, today, Texas wide receiver Xavier Worthy is in town for a 30 visit. So you don't know. And now the question is, okay, if you do move off of number four, and Field Yates in his latest two-round mock said, hey, it's too good to overthink it. You take Marvin Harrison Jr. Well, is that what Monty Austinfort believed? Because if the Cardinals do decide to move down, what's the cost? Especially if it's maybe the Minnesota Vikings at number 11. Here's former GM Rick Spielman on the 33rd team on what the Vikings might need to move up to number four.
If you are interested and really interested in coming up and get your quarterback, Minnesota Vikings, I will take the two ones for you to get up there. And I have to have a one next year because you don't have a two this year. So I'm going to have to get the one next year, but I am willing to forfeit that
for
Justin Jefferson.
Okay, I would strongly consider a Pro Bowl, All-Pro, 24-year-old wide receiver in lieu of a future first-round pick. But that's just me, Paul.
What's his age again? You looked it up. How old
is
he?
He'll be 25 at the start of this upcoming season.
Sign me up. I know it's going to cost you a lot of money, but guess what? Receivers cost a lot of cash. If you're to get Justin Jefferson and he's proven and you don't have to worry about a potential bust in the top five. You know, for all the accolades around Marvin Harrison Jr. and Rome Odunze and Malik Nabers, there have been a lot of busts from a lot of receivers in the top 10 over the years. So you get a guy who's proven, who's plug and play, and he sets your receiver room and all your weapons on offense, sort of like a closer will set a bullpen in baseball. And then you still get two more first-round picks where you can get the corner, you can get the edge. And then if you still want a speed receiver, oh, Xavier Worthy, you mentioned, maybe he's at number 35. You lost Hollywood Brown. How about a guy who runs a 4-2-1 and has the same body type, a little taller than Hollywood Brown? You get him at number 35, and now you're set for how many years at the receiver position?
And no question, wide receiver is a need. How big of a need? And that's something we might not know until draft day, and maybe not even until after the draft, Kyle, because you just don't know, based off 8 games a year ago with Kyle Murray, that wide receiver, he didn't really have a number one. Maybe Michael Wilson develops into that number one, but he relied on a tight end, Trey McBride, and his running game, and James Conner.
Well, I think we can all assume, and it's pretty obvious, that the biggest need going into this draft is a number one receiver, and we have a real opportunity. So if you want us to get off of Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four, it's a logical, it's logical that you give us a number one. To me, if we come out of this draft, I'm really happy with the moves we made in free agency. I think we've addressed a lot of needs. We've filled some holes. We've checked a lot of boxes. But the wide receiver room, it still is devoid of the talent that we need to be an explosive offense, to have that guy, to have the man that demands double coverage, that is a threat on third and long every single time. And if somebody's going to take us off of that Marvin Harrison Jr., if somebody's potentially going to make us drop down and not have a shot at the big three, it seems logical that we would demand to get a number one receiver, a real game changer, a guy that has done it, has a proven tracker record, as Paulie says, and has done things, has taken over games by himself.
Certainly sounds like you're more firm on remaining at number four as opposed to Paul over here, who wants that move down for more additional picks to address maybe more positions of need, specifically on defense.
I am, just because I believe in the talent of Marvin Harrison Jr. And I think just because of the cap flexibility, you've got control of him at a reasonable price for a number of years before you have to really pay him that big money.
I just think it's the deepest position group in this draft. And if you were to use that top pick on another position and then get receiver a little bit later, that would be my course of action, combined with the fact that receiver in the first round has the lowest hit rate of any position group in the last decade. Some of the receivers taken in the top 7 picks in the last decade: Sammy Watkins 4th, Mike Evans 7th, Amari Cooper 4th, Kevin White 7th, Corey Davis 5th, Mike Williams 7th. How many of those guys really validated their draft position? So for me, I can wait and take receiver later.
By the way, with Xavier Worthy's reported visits on Tuesday, that's now 7 different wide receivers the Cardinals have invited for top 30 workouts, and we'll see if that number increases here in the next couple of weeks. We continue here on the Cardinals Red Sea Report on the Arizona Cardinals Radio Network.
Quick set, quick throw, batted at the line of scrimmage, and that was L.J. Collier getting the big mitt up there and knocking it down. The former first-round pick out of Seattle has had an early career revival, at least so far in Cardinals camp.
He's the one guy in the room that's got the skill set to do it all. We just got to put that on the field, right? So, I mean, the guy's very talented, very athletic. I got to do a good job as a coach to help get that done physically. So we can just get him to just buy into what we're doing and just go out there and let it loose, I think you're going to see a good football player.
Highly recommend last week's Big Red Rage and the interview with Cardinals assistant, or I should say Cardinals defensive line coach, Derek LeBlanc, with Paul Calvisi and Ron Wolfley. And yes, one of the first moves of the offseason, LJ Collier re-signed. And that's just one game's worth of film, not even a full game, after he injured his bicep in week 1 against Washington and was lost for the season. But someone to hear Coach LeBlanc talk about it, Paul, that has everything that the Cardinals want and need in a defensive lineman. they just want to be able to see that now between the white lines.
There's a reason he's a former first-round pick. He's got skills, right? I mean, he definitely has the talent. He has the athleticism. And I think what we found out early in camp was, guess what? He also has the awareness to know that things didn't go the way they should have in Seattle. And he was accountable. He was culpable. And not only did he take responsibility, but his opinion was it wasn't the greatest fit for him and the system. So, Kyle, I don't know if you have an opinion on that and how big a factor that can be, but he really felt like he came to the Cardinals for a couple of reasons. One, the fit with the coaches was great, but maybe even the fit in the scheme was better. And it's just served him and his style of play. And you saw it in camp. He came out of camp as a starter. He didn't even make it out of week one, but he made some noise in a lot of those drills. You could see his talent inherently. And he was pretty productive in that Washington game until he went down. And being a bicep injury, it's not like he's coming off a major knee injury or anything. You got to figure he's going to be able to pick up where he left off.
Yeah, I think fit is a huge thing for defensive linemen. It was for me. And look, one thing you don't want to do with a defensive lineman is put too much on his plate. Don't give him too much information. Don't ask him to do too many things. Don't we had a guy, and actually it's funny because his initials were LJ. I played with him. And he would look at everything. He would see everything. And it was paralysis by analysis. He would be like, hey, look, I know if this number two receiver on the backside of me, I can tell by his alignment if it's going to be a run or not. And it just killed him. He would just be standing there, and he would never make plays. When you're a defensive lineman and you put your hand in the dirt, your job is to go. It is just to go and penetrate or knock somebody back and just wreak havoc and create and to make plays. And I'm guessing that just listening to Coach LeBlanc when he says he just needs to let it loose. He's thinking too much, and they probably asked him to do too much and to recognize too much and to read too much in Seattle, whereas they just want him – they recognize what he is. He's a supreme athlete. He's extremely gifted. He's got all the measurables, or he wouldn't have been a first-round draft pick. He's a thoroughbred. You can't put the reins on him. You've just got to let him go. You've got to let him put his hand in the dirt and let him be what he is. Defensive linemen, look, there's a lot of smart defensive linemen in the league, but it is wasted smarts. You just got to go out there and just go. Don't think, go. React. Be instinctive. And you know, you do. You study. And once you put your hands in the dirt, you don't want to be thinking about anything except going out there and making plays, really.
What did JG say about Zaven Collins at the league meetings? He's just got to trust his athleticism, his size, and just get after it and think less. Don't overthink. And coming from the fact he was playing middle linebacker the year before, right, as the Mike backer, he got accustomed to really thinking the game. Well, when they moved him out to the edge, less of that, more of your explosion, just play like a wild man, less like a thinking man. And that, in some ways, is the same challenge for Zaven Collins this year.
Just let it rip, I believe, is what JG said at the annual league meeting. Collier, by the way, signed the Friday before the official start of free agency. Says a lot. And then over a two-day period early in free agency, the Cardinals added three defensive linemen. Justin Jones, Bilal Nichols, Kyrus Tonga, all at least 6'3" and all over 300 pounds. There's a reason why defensive line was targeted early in free agency. And, of course, the two big names, Nichols and Jones. Thoughts from their new defensive line coach, Derek LeBlanc, last week on the Big Red Rage.
And one of the reasons why we have those guys is, you know, Justin can rush the passer. I think Bilal's shown some plays and stuff where he can rush the passer. I know we're kind of all over the place defensively up front, 3-4, 4-3, mm-hmm. whatever. Those guys fit the bill of a guy that can be multiple, that can do a number of things, that can stop the run, and put internal pressure on the quarterback. So those two guys are going to be really good for us.
By the way, Justin Jones last season, 4.5 sacks, would have been good for second best on the Cardinals last season. Don't really typically see a lot of sacks from a defensive lineman, especially the interior, unless you're Aaron Donald. But to see these moves, Kyle, and then not see any moves as far as edge rushers being added in free agency, maybe that's something added in the draft, but the fact that this team went out and said, we need to shore up that front, whether it's three down linemen or four down linemen.
Yeah, and what I love is, again, we talked about this over and over with these two, is just their versatility. You can put them up and down the line, take advantage of matchups, and again, it just depends what was their fit. How were they asked to do where they were, because they've both played some nose tackle, which typically you're not even asked to rush the passer. Sometimes you're only a first and second down player and you come off the field on third down. But they both are disruptive. They both can penetrate. They both can make plays. And look, Coach LeBlanc two years ago was in Miami. And who was the most sought after interior defensive tackle in free agency this year? It was Christian Wilkins. He coached him. He knows what it takes to get that out of an interior defensive tackle. He knows how to get them to get to the quarterback, how to create that interior pressure, how to get tackles for a loss, get them in the backfield. So I'm really intrigued to see, you know, he identified these two. He was a big part of the decision-making process to get those two in the building and to see what he can get out of them, if he can get that same type of production as he did out of Christian Wilkins.
I mean, think of Coach LeBlanc and what he did from week one to week 18. Think of his three starters in week one. He had guys like L.J. Collier and Carlos Watkins and Jonathan Ledbetter, and by week 18 he had Phil Hoskins and Naquan Jones and Roy Lopez and Ben Stille, you know, guys off the practice squad. So I don't know who exactly was the most productive or the most challenged position coach last year, but considering all the injuries as the D&D line stood for devastated and decimated, Coach LeBlanc definitely earned his paycheck last year in coaching up that group.
Dante Stills played a lot more than he anticipated as a rookie coming out of West Virginia. And speaking of players coming out of college, defensive line, do the Cardinals add coming up later this month to that room? One more from Coach LeBlanc on what he looks for in a college D lineman.
You always look for the measurables, right? Height, weight, arm length, all that good stuff. But I think a D lineman has to have a toughness about him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a lot of good looking pretty ones out there that don't like sticking their face in it. A guy that's willing to bite and put his face in it and be physical, that's number one. You can't play the position if you're not tough and physical. Going into this draft, man, that's what we're looking for.
LeBlanc also mentioned that football is a man's game. Quote, you have to be a big physical, you know what, to play that position. So I think we've already heard several different sound bites, whether it was from Nichols or Jones, Kyle, about just their mentality that they play with and the mentality that they want to bring to that Cardinals D-line room.
Yeah, to me, I love it. That's what D-line. I love the interview. I love hearing him talk. I wish Paulie didn't ask him so many questions about crawfish. And just, I mean, there's no better interview than interviewing a D-line coach. And all Paulie wanted to talk about was how he wanted his crawfish.
Wow.
But, and no, it was great. Again, this is why there's so many misses in the first round, second round of an NFL draft, because everybody gets enamored with what a 40 time is how long of a reach does a guy have, or they look at a guy's, you know, highlight tape. But to me, what do you get from a guy on play 60? What do you get from a guy on, you know, the eighth play of a 2 minute drive? What do you get when it's overtime? Is a guy digging deep? What do you, is a guy willing to stick his face in there when a guard, a 340-pound guard, is pulling and running straight at him? Is he willing to sacrifice his body for the benefit of his team? And that, those are the things that very few defensive linemen will do over and over and over, but those are the defensive linemen that will win you games. Everybody thinks they want the defensive lineman that's going to get them 14 sacks a season, but the defensive lineman that gives 100% effort play after play after play are the ones that are going to win you the games and get you to the playoffs at the end of the season.
First off, Coach LeBlanc, it's not like he's from Manhattan, okay? He's from the crawfish capital of the world, hence it was a legitimate question. Number two, do you think if you took all the film of all the NFL defensive linemen who hit free agency, and Monty Osifort said, Kyle Vandenbosch, tell me who's tough and who isn't, can you make a pretty decisive decision and feel confident about that just based on their film, their game film?
Absolutely. And the way you find is, like, if the team is down by two touchdowns, how is that player playing? If your team is up by two scores, how is that player playing? Because that's what the player is made out of. It's when you don't have to. If there is a pass 30 yards downfield and the player is out of the screen, what is he doing? Does he just stop and watch? Or is he going to pursue, like he might make the play? He might make that play 1 out of 100 times, but that 100th time might save the game. You know, those are the players you want in your locker room.
Is he pursuing the play like Chase Young did in the postseason? Or is he pursuing the play with his hair on fire like Dennis Gardeck, right?
Exactly.
How many times have we said it? Film doesn't lie. and those last games a year ago for the Cardinals, those final four games, who's putting forth the full 60 minutes and who's not? Because at the end of the day, if it's not with the Cardinals, some other team is watching that film, and all of a sudden, well, you have a team, or maybe you don't have a team. By the way, speaking of Paul Calvisi, join him in 2 weeks' time at the Arizona Cardinals draft party, Thursday, April 25th, on the Great Lawn at State Farm Stadium. Gates open at 4. You've got live draft coverage. Cardinals players, cheerleaders, Big Red will all be there. Also, fireworks at the conclusion of the events. For more information, go to azcardinals.com/draft party. By the way, admission, parking, free, but you do need digital ticketing. So go to azcardinals.com/draft party.
Forget the confetti. Maybe we'll throw out crawfish into the crowd. That'll work.
Halftime here on the Cardinals Red Sea Report on the Arizona Cardinals Radio Network.
With the sixth pick in the 2023 NFL Draft, the Arizona Cardinals select Paris Johnson Jr., Ohio State.
High, high football character. Highly intelligent, well-spoken, mature, dependable. And you can tell that he's made of the right things, the things that we want not only our offensive linemen to be made of, but our entire team.
Started all 17 games. Played every single offensive snap and more on special teams. Bottom line, Paris Johnson Jr. was not taken off the field year one and plugged in at right tackle from the get-go. Question is, what happens with Paris Johnson Jr. this upcoming season? As we say, welcome back. It is the Cardinals Red Sea Report. Greg Realu, Paul Calvisi, and Kyle Vandenbosch. We just touched on the D-line. About the O-line, you know you've got Paris Johnson Jr., you signed Jonah Williams. I do think, though, Paul, offensive line could be in play for the Cardinals first round, even if it is a trade down into the early teens, certainly in the 20s as well. But right now that offensive line has one hole, and that is, what do you do at left guard?
No doubt. And if you were to get a guy who had the versatility to play inside for his first year or two, then you absolutely do it. And there are plenty of guys who have plenty of athleticism who are capable of doing that. So we saw the importance that the Cardinals, Monty Osivor and Jonathan Gannon, attached to the O-line a year ago, just in drafting Paris Johnson Jr. and from the get-go, making him a day one starter. We're talking day one starter with rookie minicamp. Like, he wasn't competing for anything. He was a franchise tackle. Just a matter of which side. NFL Network says it's going to be the left side. We'll see. Jonah Williams has plenty of experience at both. But if it's not that, I'm still on my radar at number 27 or number 35 could be a franchise center. There are three franchise centers in this draft that will probably be gone by early second round. And I wouldn't be shocked if the Cardinals – remember when Rodney Hudson gave the Cardinals that one really good year? It really made a difference. It changed my opinion on the position itself and the value. And if the Cardinals are going to go out and get a franchise center, and then all of a sudden, oh, Yelda Froholt's competing for left guard because he has experience at guard as well, I wouldn't be shocked.
Cardinals also signed Evan Brown in free agency, someone who has both center and guard experience. But as we've heard a lot, whether that's the D-line or the O-line, it's all about the line of scrimmage for general manager Monty Austin-Ford.
And that was a big reason why the offense had success late in the season was their ability to control the line of scrimmage. I mean, it was impressive the way that they could move the ball, that they could impose their will. And it showed, you know, not only just early in games, but, you know, the dam broke late in games where, you know, runs that were 2-3 yard runs in the first and second quarters were all of a sudden 4-7 yard runs late in games, because that's how the NFL goes. And that's how, I mean, it's kind of an old saying, but you need to be able to be physical and be able to run the ball late in the season, and particularly in the playoffs. And the Cardinals, that's exactly what they did. And the formula worked. And they were playing their best football when they were running the ball really well. And so you can expect that, yes, they will add talent to this offensive line, and not just this draft, but as long as Monty Austin-Ford is here, as long as Jonathan Gannon is here, as long as this offense is, you know, the plays are being called by Drew Petzing, the offensive line will be the strength of this offense. And, you know, what I would expect is, regardless of who they bring in, it will be physical players that, you know, maybe they're not finesse players, but players that can move players off the line of scrimmage, that can pick up that crucial third and short, fourth and short, because, you know, Jonathan Gannon has shown that he's willing to go for it when the game's on the line and they need that short yardage play.
I mean, this is a team that had two 99-yard drives last season. The whole cram it vertical thing was real. By the way, this year, Kyle, we're using path of totality. If there's a 99-yard drive, we're going to bust out the Eclipse terminology, path of totality.
Get your nerd terminology out of here.
See, new decision makers, there's a new philosophy. There's a new emphasis. For example, in 2021, what happened in round two? The Cardinals drafted Rondale Moore. You know who they left on the board? Creed Humphrey. Standout Pro Bowl caliber center. The next year, Cardinals in round one traded away their first round pick for Hollywood Brown. You know who's still on the board? Tyler Linderbaum. Standout center for Baltimore. Throwback, old school, nasty dude. With Monty Osivor and Jonathan Gannon, I don't think that happens anymore. I think the emphasis is on O-line, at least the trenches, both sides of the ball.
Well, we found out later, after a year ago, the draft, that even if the Cardinals had stayed at number three, Paris Johnson Jr. was most likely going to be the selection. You just got him a couple of picks later, plus you got draft capital. A good first year, dare I say, a great first year for Paris Johnson Jr. His new teammate, Jonah Williams, from afar, what did he see out of the Cardinals' rookie tackle?
I mean, I've heard only positive things about him, how mature he is. And, you know, obviously just seeing him in the draft, phenomenal athlete. And, you know, watching his tape last year, he's a great player. And I'm excited to, you know, to book in the line with him.
Just a matter of which side of the line of scrimmage that they will book in the Cardinals offensive line. Then we talk about the number of tackles in this year's draft, the interior play, whether that's a center or guard. There's a number of different names out there that everyone is top of mind with. Charles Davis, though, on the 33rd team, mentioned one versatile Washington offensive lineman.
A person who's underappreciated, but his value will be high, and that's Troy Fitano, the offensive lineman from the University of Washington. Excellent footwork, good hands, but the best part about his game, I think, is his scheme versatility. You want a guard? I think he can kick inside to guard, even though he's been a tackle at the University of Washington. You want a starting left tackle? I think that he can definitely be that guy. If you need him to play on the right side, he can do that as well. He can hit moving targets out in open field. He can pass protect. He can move people in the run game.
That's another piece of this puzzle, Kyle, when you talk about offensive line play, whether that's Monty, whether that's JG. They want those offensive linemen to be versatile, whether that's inside on any one of those three interior positions, or versatile enough to play left side, right side, or in the cases maybe some of these younger offensive linemen coming out of college, stick them in. If they're one of your five best, let them play the guard position and then move them to the outside later on in their career.
Yeah, versatility is huge because of what we went through the last 2 years. 2 years ago, it was a rash of injuries on the offensive line. Last year was a rash of injuries on the defensive line. So you need your players to be flexible, to have had experience at multiple positions, to be willing to move to multiple positions so that you can still execute your offense, that there's not a big drop-off. I mean, you know, I've been a part of it. You see it throughout the league. When one of your key players goes down and there's a huge drop, you've got to throw out half of your playbook. You can't execute plays because you're missing one of your key cogs in your offensive line. So I think that's huge to have that type of versatility. And you know, this is the type of player, Fitano, that I think would be great in this system. He's a brawler. He's physical. He loves to impose his will on players. So, you know, I think he would fit in great with the Arizona Cardinals.
6'4", 317 pounds, 26 starts the last two seasons, all at left tackle.
And you know, a lot of mock drafts have him staying home and going to the Seattle Seahawks at number 16. Seahawks need serious help on their offensive line. They lost five offensive linemen in free agency so far, and that offensive front was nothing to write home about to start with. So they need to invest in the offensive line. I have a hard time seeing him get past Seattle at 16. But if the Cardinals trade down to 11, 12, or 13, and they end up with a tackle, I wouldn't be shocked by that either. Once again, an athletic guy like this who could go interior for a while.
Another reason why offensive line might be in play early in day one is because you look past 2024, you only have three linemen signed past this upcoming season. Jonah Williams, Paris Johnson Jr., and we forget, John Gaines. Those are the only three offensive linemen signed beyond this season. So maybe it's not a selection for 2024, but it's a selection for the future, because if you're drafting an offensive lineman in the first round, now all of a sudden that's someone that you hope is going to be around for 8, 9, 10 plus years.
Yeah, that's big to have that type of continuity, to have a guy that you can, you know that's going to fill a role, be in that spot that you can count on for years. It's last year we saw, it was Monty Asafort came in, didn't necessarily know what he had with this roster, and it was all one, possibly two-year contracts. Now we're seeing in free agency, it's a lot of three-year contracts, because he's starting to figure out this roster, what he needs, what holes he wants to fill, what type of players he wants. And now if we can, with draftable players with that we have control of, with reasonable contracts, have guys that we can fill these roles and hopefully have them be lifelong Cardinals that fill these roles on the offensive line, that would be great.
And what do GMs like to do? Monty and everyone else work a year ahead of time. They look at the roster and they go, okay, wait a minute. Three offensive linemen under contract 2025. We better invest and develop now. And if the guy is able to compete and get playing time right away, all the better. Early return on investment. James Conner at running back. So you think of a guy like Will Hernandez and James Conner, but this is the final year of their contracts. And yes, they are major pieces of this Cardinals offense, but if you're the GM, you have to consider that and what you're doing going forward.
Bird Gang, make sure you check out azcardinals.com/tickets. Learn about the premium seating, group tickets, and the all-new luxury field seating experiences today. Home opponents for this upcoming season: Bears, Chargers, Patriots, Jets, Lions, Commanders, and of course the NFC West. For more information, go to azcardinals.com/tickets. This is the Arizona Cardinals Radio Network.
Lobs it near side and adjusting to make the catch is Dortch. Caught at the 40 by Dortch. Turns right, stiff arming 45 and past midfield, still going. It's a gain of 31. Spinning away from a defender. Breaks a tackle near side 40. 35, 30. Cuts it back to the right at the 25 and tackled at the 21. What a great return by Greg Dortch.
Greg Dortch got whacked and kept running. What a huge play by Greg Dortch.
And a diving catch is made by Dortch. A first down. Great catch.
Oh my goodness. That is full extension by Greg Dortch right there on the out route. Great catch.
Caught again. Dortch. Broken tackle. 30. Right side 20. Cuts back to the left of the 10. Another broken tackle.
Breaks the tackle. Breaks another tackle. And then another tackle.
25-20. Angles outside the numbers of the 10. 5. Dives into the end zone. Touchdown, Greg Dortch.
Greg Dortch is on fire.
You just got Dortched.
Little known facts about Kyle Vandenbosch, as we say welcome back here to the Cardinals Red Sea Report, but if you happen to call KVB, you hear Paul Calvisi say, "You got Dortched." That is the ringtone for Kyle Vandenbosch's cell phone. That's how he rolls, the president of the Greg Dortch fan club.
You know why, and this is just speculation, so we'll get an answer. The reason KVB likes Greg Dortch, despite the fact they play totally different positions, totally different body types, is that you can't tell the difference between Greg Dortch's effort level in a dog day training camp practice in the middle of August versus week 17 with the playoffs on the line. He's the same dude, same intensity. That's why I love watching him play, because he's just all out all the time.
Absolutely. I mean, he's very productive. He's dangerous with the ball in his hands. He's explosive. When he makes a cut and sticks his foot in the ground, he gains ground quickly. It's been a mystery since he's been with this team, because when given opportunities, he produces every single time, and then he just disappears for stretches. So, at this point, it seems to be on him to figure out why that is, whether it be practice habits, study habits, but it's got to be something, because he is, when given the opportunity, an extremely valuable contribution to this offense, to this team, to the special teams, not just for his production, but for the energy that he brings to this team, what he brings to the sidelines when he is on the field and making plays, or when the juice he brings to the sidelines. I mean, he does seem to have a good connection with Kyler Murray, which is also very important because when Kyler Murray came back, that's when Greg Dortch's production picked up this past season.
Well, you talk about the production. The first 10 games, one catch, 2 yards. The last seven games, 24 catches, 280 yards, and two touchdowns. When given the opportunity, Dortch delivers. It's just a matter of that opportunity. And I wonder now, with the addition of DJ Dallas, special teams, more of a kickoff returner, does that open up the door maybe for Dortch to play some more offense? At least right now, he's your top three wide receiver. Does that change once the draft happens in post-draft? But right now, Dortch is one of your main wideouts.
And look, they list him at 5'7", 175. So he took a beating in the return game. There were times you're like, oh my goodness, from the sideline level, like he'd take a direct hit, he'd get propelled in the air or propelled out of bounds. So, okay, maybe minimize some of that wear and tear on his body. Save all that yards after catch talent for the offense, for when he is on the receiving end, the business end of a Kyler Murray pass, because he makes dudes miss. There's a reason he earned the return job. He is so elusive. But you know what? Now maybe he's better served in the passing game and getting the ball to him downfield a little bit, like in that Bears highlight we heard at the very end. That seemed to be an innocuous underneath route, and boom, all of a sudden it's a 48-yard touchdown because he turns it into a punt return or a kick return, and he's making dudes look stupid in space.
Right now you've got Michael Wilson, Zach Pascal, Greg Dortch, Chris Moore, who you added in free agency, and then there's a handful of others that you signed to future deals. But, of course, we're talking about the draft and who might be available at number four if the Cardinals stick and pick, or do they trade down? Can they get one of these top three wide receivers? We talked about Marvin Harrison Jr. Well, the other name out there, Rome Odunze, who did reportedly have a top 30 visit recently with the Cardinals. The comp for him, here's Jordan Schultz on the Herd with Colin Cowherd.
Davante Adams, he's really good. You know who else is really good? Rome Odunze. Well, and the reason I bring up Adams is because an NFL scout told me that's the comp for Odunze. Look at him at the line of scrimmage. Look at the way he releases. He uses the basketball background, the body control, except he's a little bigger, a little faster, measured almost 6'3", ran a 4.45. He's a freak.
6'3", 212. 39-inch vertical jump, ran a 6.88 three-cone drill. Yeah, I would certainly take a Davante Adams in this offense.
And here's the thing about Rome Odunze. He had quite a few more contested catches than Marvin Harrison Jr. He can catch in traffic. He got a lot of attention this last year at UW. And we saw a lot of his games being out here on the West Coast, and he was always making a physical contested catch. So for everything that Michael Wilson did, for example, this year, the thing that impressed me the most as a guy with size, 6'2", 215 plus, is that Michael Wilson made a lot of contested catches. That's a separator in the NFL. You can look great in the combine and all the drills and the measurables, but you better be able to make a physical catch in traffic in the NFL.
Who's going to be that guy on third and long? Who's going to be that guy in the red zone that Kyler Murray can drop back and look to and know that the ball is either going to be caught or it's going to fall incomplete? It's not going to get picked off. You can put it in jeopardy, but you trust the receiver to have the position to make the catch or attempt to make the catch.
There's no question he can do that. Look, and what do we know about Monty Osford and Jonathan Gannon? They draft the complete player. They draft not just talent, but locker room guys. They showed it last year, guys that are students of the game, guys that love the game, guys that are good in the locker room. And I've heard over and over just great things about Rome Odunze and the type of person he is and the type of teammate that he is. And I, you know, one of the things that I was most impressed with him is last season in college against U of A, on an onside kick, he broke his ribs, punctured his lung, and then went into the bye week and didn't miss any time, played the next game against Oregon. So not only is he a high character player, an intelligent player, but he's got that level of toughness as well, where he wants to be out there. He's going to fight to be back. He's going to play through injury, and he's going to be accountable and available for his teammates.
Here's the other thing with this staff. No block, no rock. So if we hit zoom out here on the last year or so, DeAndre Hopkins no longer with this team. Hollywood Brown's no longer with this team. Rondale Moore is no longer with his team. Would you say blocking was a specialty for any one of those guys? Michael Wilson was a starter week one. Why? Because he was laying some hefty blocks on dudes throughout training camp and in the preseason, and that got Jonathan Gannon's attention, and that got him inserted into the starting lineup week one at Washington. So when you look at all the film, take a look at which guys actually consider it part of their job description to lay a block on a DB or maybe even a linebacker, because that's going to catch the attention of Monty and JG.
And that's the unknown for me for those three wide receivers that we all talk about, because if you look at the highlights, well, you're not seeing any one of those guys block. But to Paul's point, Kyle, if you're not blocking, well, you're not a part of this offense, because the ball might not be headed your way every single snap.
Yeah, it's a huge part of this offense. Look, the Cardinals are going to run the ball next year, and if you're on the field, you've got a job on that play. Whether it be running a route or blocking, you've got to do your job.
Two more weeks, a little over 2 weeks, before we will know for certain what the Cardinals do when they are on the clock at pick number 4. Until then, well, I guess I got to look up those mock drafts and speculation.
Oh, more please. Come on. Keep them coming.
Calvisi loves.
Keep them coming.
Special thanks to everyone behind the scenes, our executive producer, Jim Omohundro, associate producer, Cody Fincher, technical director, Matt Lazarus. For Paul Calvisi, Kyle VandenBosch, I'm Craig Riolu. We'll talk to you in 1 week's time. This is the Cardinals Red Sea Report on the Arizona Cardinals Radio Network.
You've been listening to the Cardinals Red Sea Report.
It is caught by McBride, and it's a touchdown. Buda Baker with the sack, stripped the ball. Murray's going to score, touchdown.
Oh, baby.
The Cardinals Red Sea Report is brought to you by the Arizona Cardinals mobile app. Visit azcardinals.com/app.
Touchdown! Cardinals win!
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Arizona Cardinals Football Club.